You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. There's an art to making the complex feel simple. Everything should be in sync so that even the smallest part serves a bigger purpose. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so ambitious companies have the precision, control, and focus they need to perform at their best. Apply in minutes at mercury.com.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Live from MMA Fighting Studios, this is Between the Links. And now, your host, Mike Heck.
The iconic voice of Esther Lynn welcomes you to a brand new and special edition of Between the Links. Hope you're all having a great week thus far. Today on the program, a little bit of a different show. We're going to give you sort of a peek behind the curtain because we are in the final quarter of 2022, which is a very important time in the world of mixed martial arts. We are about to embark on a pivotal stretch for the year-end awards. We have some big fights on the books that we're all looking forward to, and some that could have some serious impact on these awards. And also, honestly, how much more can we talk about freaking Mark Zuckerberg going to a UFC event? I'm zuckered out, if I'm being honest. There's no UFC this weekend. There's no Bellator. There's no PFL. No major MMA this weekend. We do have Glory, and we got an interesting announcement that Le'Veon Bell is boxing Uriah Hall on the Jake Paul Anderson Silva card. But we could talk about some of that stuff next week. So I figured let's have a roundtable, see what some of the crew is thinking in regards to where these awards stand right now, heading into these pivotal final couple of months of the year. So let us introduce the panelists on the show this week. First, one of the OGs of MMA media. He's the host of Fighter vs. Writer on MMAfighting.com, and he is not a fan of my rankings more often than not. Let us say hello to Damon Martin. What's up, man?
Just starting right off on the old rankings thing. We're just getting it right off the bat.
Absolutely. And also from MMAfighting.com, one of the main co-hosts of the ranking show, the co-host of On to the Next One, the Prince of Positivity, and he's the best friend to not just me, but to us all. Mr. Alexander K. Lee, how are you, my friend?
My best friend, I am great. You forgot to mention I'm also the only one who knows what's next for Paddy Pimblett in the UFC. The only man who will be correctly predicting his next matchup.
I can't wait till he has the next fight book so I can move on from this whole entire conversation. But we're going to get into this all momentarily. But a couple of things off the bat. One, I did ask Jed Meshew if he wanted to be a part of this, and he is sticking to his retirement. He's not Kevin Holland in this situation. He's sticking to his retirement. And the second thing, the MMA fighting year-end awards have these specific categories. At least this is what we did last year. The male and female fighters of the year, the fight of the year, the submission of the year, knockout of the year, and the rookie of the year. So we're going to go through all of these, see what we're all thinking as of now in terms of who is in the lead, how things can change, if there's some potentially controversial picks in the mix, and then we're just going to try to hash things out here. So I want to start with the knockout of the year, gentlemen, if we could, because this award and the submission of the year, you can't really predict the future of these, and we just really can't, honestly. So if we could at least list off the potential nominees as of right now, we can have who is in the lead, etc. So Damon, let's start with you. I feel like there's three options here, two of which I feel are going to be vying for the spot overall, and it's probably going to take something truly spectacular to add another one to this list. But if you had to vote today for the knockout of the year, what is it?
It's actually a tougher question to answer because when I look at knockout of the year, and I do this with submission of the year as well, it's not just the greatness of the finish, it's also the magnitude. And I'm sorry to say that to me, it always comes down to like how good the fight is in terms of like ranking, in terms of the level of talent involved in the knockout or the submission. Because we've seen some crazy submissions, some crazy knockouts on the regional level, which, you know, they're great, but unfortunately they don't have the same kind of impact. So for me, it comes down to two knockouts. It comes down to Michael Chandler and Tony Ferguson. It comes down to Leon Edwards and Kamaru Usman. And I actually put Michael Chandler's knockout over Tony Ferguson at the top of the list. Listen, I know Tony Ferguson isn't the same dude that he was a few years ago when he was going to fight Khabib and he was the number two lightweight in the world. But he's still a really good fighter and a guy that's never been ethered like that before. And for Michael Chandler to go out and front kick him into oblivion, the photo we all know, we've all seen, this, the horrifying photo and the results of that fight, just the impact of that knockout to me just tops the list. It's hard for me to, even as great as Leon Edwards' knockout was, and it was incredible, just the impact of watching Michael Chandler's foot go into Tony Ferguson's face, then hitting the canvas. It was just an incredible knockout. And to me, it's going to take something really, really, really crazy to top that for 2022.
AK, what's at the top of your list right now? Because I feel like we're all going to be in the same boat here. It's either going to be Leon Edwards or Michael Chandler at this point. So where are you at with this? Or maybe you have something completely different.
No. When we did our mid-season awards a few months ago, 1 month early, this was my fault. Here's our headline. I'll read it right here. Will anything top Michael Chandler's insane front kick knockout? And the answer is yes, definitely. I did change my pick. I know Damon said he's sticking with the Chandler kick, which, I mean, aesthetically is just outstanding, unforgettable. But I mean, the Leon Edwards head kick of Usman, I think it's just a notch below that. Very aesthetically pleasing knockout. You got the clinging connection, the auditory sensation, the way that Kamaru fell, the way it was a no doubter. He was out of there. It just checks off so many boxes well, not just the visual, but it's a UFC title fight. It's Leon Edwards on, you know, both fighters on this huge win streak. Leon Edwards, a long-awaited title shot. Maybe people weren't like super hyped about it, but they know he deserved it, and it felt like he had been passed over for, you know, another shot at fighting Kamaru. He was definitely behind on the cards. He was down 3-1, so the necessity of it is a huge point in his favor. And then we'll see we'll see how history looks back on it. But boy, I mean, again, beating a guy who was 15-0. Untouchable, pound for pound, number one in our rankings. Not consensus, but was number one pound for pound fighter. Volkanovski, I think, had taken the spot, but was still in the top three. And Usman had held the number one spot for the majority of the time that we've been doing the MMA fighting pound for pound ranking. So there's just all these little things that add up. And we'll see how our rematch goes. I'm sure they'll fight again someday. Third time to say a trilogy bout. But for now, boy, what a moment in time for Leon Edwards. What a, I don't want to say Hail Mary, because like people keep saying it's lucky. It wasn't lucky, but just the perfect strike at the perfect time. And given the stakes, I have to put that as the best knockout so far heading into the last few months of the year here.
Yeah, it's always the conversation. I feel like this is going to come up again, where it's you weigh the finish itself against the stakes that are involved in it. And I think Chandler's knockout was the best actual finish, taking the stakes out of it. Like, if all fights were treated the same, there were no titles, I think Chandler wins this award. And I think Molly McCann is probably second to Leon Edwards, and Leon Edwards is probably third. But I just don't know if this outweighs the circumstances behind Leon's knockout of Kamaru Usman. Less than a minute, not only of the necessity of winning the fight and staying in there, but that was probably his only chance ever to fight for the UFC welterweight title. So with that said, it's Edwards for me right now, just because of the stakes involved in it. But I mean, listen, if you think Michael Chandler's front kick KO of Tony Ferguson's number one, I ain't gonna argue with you. Are there any other options that you guys are thinking about?
The Molly McCann one, I will say that was the Molly McCann one was pretty incredible. I will give a heads up for that. That was an incredible knockout. And both of them, by the way, she had two of them, which is kind of crazy in the same year. It's almost like you want to give her credit for two knockouts in one year. So that was pretty spectacular. And I love a good spinning elbow, spinning back kick. I love a good spinning knockout. You know, as Nick Diaz once famously said to Carlos Condit, we're throwing spinning bleep now. I don't know if we can curse on the show, so I don't want to curse. But yeah, we're throwing spinning bleep now. So yeah, I love the spinning knockouts. But I think Molly McCann's probably like a good third, in my opinion, like the third runner up in this one.
Yeah, Molly McCann definitely in there. She was the frontrunner. That was before the Chandler knockout, right?
Yeah,
I think
the first one. Yeah.
I remember when that happened, and we were like, oh, the last knockout of the year. I mean, it was the first spinning back attack knockout by a female fighter, so it was history making. It happened in London, which was just the first London card of this year. So again, the atmosphere was just incredible. Like, it amplified the moment like so much. So that was up there. I listed some other honorable mentions. Zhang Weili also had a spinning knockout, amazing spinning knockout of Joanna Jacek. I don't know if that was kind of a downer for some people to see Joanna go out like that. So maybe that's why it isn't quite getting the attention that Molly's did, or also because it came after Molly's. But that was huge. I mean, that knockout was insane. Koroshkov annihilating Chancellor encounters. Speaking of spinning stuff, just annihilating Chancellor encounters insides with that spin kick.
That's a good
if
one.
Anyone's, yeah, and there was a follow-up post after from Chan saying, like, here's what happened to my rib cage. Like, my rib cage, like, no longer exists. So, you know, thank you for that. thank you for that. Something like that. He didn't say that, but boy, it was bad. And then a couple more. Goichi Yamauchi, also in Bellator. One of my favorites, just him becoming the Terminator all of a sudden on the feet and taking out Neiman Gracie. I don't know what the hell that was. Like, it was hilarious and so fun to watch, and just uppercutting Neiman Gracie into another dimension. And then DJ. Like, any other year, I feel like the DJ revenge knee would have been number one, like, clearly. And now it's like maybe third at best, again, behind the two front kicks and maybe even behind Molly McCann. But like, it looked amazing. The poetry of it, the symmetry, it was just so cool. And it was a huge event for one. Like, it really capped off a big event. So, and put him back in our pound for pound, back atop the quote unquote flyweight rankings. That's a whole other discussion we don't need to get into now. So yeah, a lot of historical value there, and it looked amazing. So it's crazy. I almost want to say that's like my favorite knockout of the year, but I can't put it above Edwards or Chandler.
And DJ did DJ's, it against the lightweight. Yeah. He did it against the lightweight.
And the guy's so much bigger. Yeah. It's huge.
Yeah. DJ's definitely going to be my list. We talk about that London card in March. Ilya Topuria was probably the front runner for knockout of the year before Molly McCann got hers, because he deaded Jai Herbert. It was nasty. And Tai Tuivasa is someone I'd like to honorably mention as well for the finish of Derek Lewis. So let's go to the submission of the year. And we can go the stakes route here again. We can go with the uniqueness of the submission. This is always kind of a toss-up here. We can weigh prelim submissions versus main event submissions. There's a bunch of different ways we can go with this. So, AK, we'll start with you. What do you have right now? Because, again, we have stakes versus taste here, and there's a number of avenues we could travel. What's your go-to right now?
Yeah, I am sticking with my mid-season choice here. I'm going to go, or mid-year choice, say it was Jessica Andrade from April 23rd Apex event, her standing arm triangle choke of Amanda Lemos. It was just so vicious, such a reminder of how Jessica Andrade is one of the like best pound-for-pound female fighters of all time. And not to speak of her in past tense, again, she's in the middle of a pound-for-pound great career. Strawweight, flyweight, it doesn't matter. She just finishes people. Lemos is a pretty highly rated up-and-coming contender. You know, I know she was certainly behind Andrade in the rankings and the underdog going into this fight, but the way that Andrade just overpowered her and just slapped on that arm triangle, standing against the fence, nowhere to go. Just the still images from it are like so disturbing and so powerful. So I'm sticking with that. Yeah, there are definitely some other choices, fights with bigger stakes, but that to me was like my favorite, and I'm going with Batastaka for now.
I'm going with stakes here. I have to go with Jiří Procházka right now, because like Leon Edwards, Jiří was about to lose his title fight to Glover Teixeira at UFC 275. He was a minute away from losing the fight. And then he goes out and submits Glover Teixeira, winning in a way that nobody ever thought he could. And obviously Andrade is up there with the standing arm triangle. I think Oliver Enkamp's buggy choke is something that should probably be looked at. I watched a lot of submissions over the last 24 hours. I liked Vanessa Demopoulos's submission over Silvania Gomez-Horz because she got freaking cracked in that fight, overcame it, got the sub. Obviously, jumping into Joe Rogan's arms is a big deal. And Saeed Nurmagomedov just stunning Cody Stamann real quick. And that was in January at UFC 270. The list goes on. But Damon, I don't know, at least to me, if anything beats Jiří Prochazka with everything else involved. What do you think?
It's a weird one because if you said biggest submission of the year, I would say Jiří Prochazka gets it because there's no bigger submission than doing what he did to a high-level grappler like Glover Teixeira. But again, this is one where I'm kind of torn, kind of like the Michael Chandler, Leon Edwards thing. The bigger submission was the Jiří Prochazka. The better submission, in my opinion, was the Jessica Andrade against Amanda Lemos, and that's why it's topping my list. It's a standing. We've only seen it one other time at this level, and that was when Jessica I did it to Zoila Frosto back in Bellator like 10 years ago, the standing arm triangle choke. It's such a weird, random choke and so hard to get standing. I mean, it's just a ridiculous move to get. And again, Jessica Andrade against Amanda Lemos isn't a low-level fight. It's a really high-level fight between two top fighters, and to go out there and do what she did was so incredible. So she top for me. I have no problem if it's Jiří Prochazka. Like I said, that's the bigger submission. That's the one with more meaning behind it because he tapped out an incredible grappler. He did it in a title fight. He did it in the moment he was losing, and he went out there and got the submission. So that was huge. Also want to shout out Renier de Ritter over in ONE Championship, pulling off the weird inverted triangle choke to get his submission win. That was a big one. And then that weird guillotine-ish kind of choke we just saw in Bellator like recently, like again, incredible submission. I just think when you're talking about like the prelim submission versus the main card, main event kind of submissions, again, it's harder to put that in the same context when you're talking about, Glover Teixeira, Jiří Prochazka, Amanda, Jessica Andrade, things like that. So incredible submission, but I still go with Jessica Andrade number one, but I think Jiří is a good second pick. And I love the Renier de Ritter one. I thought that inverted triangle was sick.
Yeah, that's a great one. I want to shout out Tommy Aspinall as well. That was just, I mean, it's a submission we see all the time, but just the moment behind it was very memorable in that main event in March at UFC London. But AK, any others that stand out to you?
Yeah, I'll toss out another inverted triangle. Lazy King, Abdul Abdurakhimov, probably one of the best guys who isn't signed to a major North American promotion right now. He did it at Ares FC 3 earlier this year. It looked probably just as good as Reiner de Ritter's. Again, a little bit of a lower, not as well-known show, but, Ares FC is doing some good stuff. He also did it against a UFC veteran, Godofredo Pepe, who had never been submitted before. So this was really big. It was actually pretty big when it happened. So I'll go with that. I thought that deserves mention. And again, if you guys haven't seen Lazy King, he's got a ton of highlight reel submissions. Definitely look him up. Claudio Pueyas's knee bar of Clay Guida, I thought was sensational, just amazing. And then one more from sort of the strange pile. Luca Poklit, who did he submit? Dante Shiro at Bellator 285 just last month. I'd never seen a choke done like that before. That was awesome. And good for him I think that was his Bellator debut and making quite an impact. So that was a cool one.
Yeah, that was the what the hell did I just see submission of the year. No doubt about it.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. Financial operations are needlessly complex. Startups have to cobble together a patchwork of tools to reconcile transactions from different sources and struggle to glean answers from platforms that speak different languages. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so you can pay bills faster, stay in control of company spending, and speed up reconciliation. Apply in minutes at mercury.com and join over 100,000 ambitious startups that trust Mercury, not just for banking and credit cards, but for the precision, control, and focus they need to transform their financial workflows and perform at their best. Mercury, the art of simplified finances. Apply in minutes at mercury.com. Mercury is a financial technology company, not a bank. Banking services provided by Choice Financial Group and Evolve Bank & Trust. Members FDIC.
So let's head to the fight of the year. And in most people's eyes, this is a two-horse race. And to me, it's a three-horse race, maybe even a four. But I'll start with this one. And look, this is one of those things in regards to how you view this category. Do you favor chaos? Do you go against AK and favor the mixing of the martial arts? Do you favor stakes? Do you favor one round against three, four, or five rounds? A lot to dissect and think of. And for me, honorable mentions, Charles Oliveira versus Justin Gaethje was incredible. It was an unbelievable fight for those 3 minutes and change. That's going to make my list. My favorite fight of the year is Arman Tsarukyan versus Baatoush Gamrot. I have watched that fight more than any other fight, but it's not in the top two because it's going to come down to these two fights. It's going to come down to Khamzat Chimaev versus Gilbert Burns and Jiří Procházka versus Glover Teixeira. And for me, it is the latter because I've never seen a fight just have so many swings, so many momentum changes, so many emotional roller coaster moments, and just so much insanity for the entirety of the fight like that, especially in one that no one thought was going to get out of the first or second round. This thing gets to the final minute and we get Jiří Procházka just locking on the sub at the very end. And to me, I'm going to give Jiří as much of a rub as possible because I felt like he got hosed out of two awards last year, but I just don't see anything beating this in my eyes, but I'm willing to listen to arguments for some of the other selections. So Damon, what say you? What's on your list? What's your number one?
Boy, I tell you what, you know what I really thought about it. This is a lot more difficult question than I thought it would be, to be honest. Like, I was like, oh yeah, I know it's going to be Gilbert Burns and Khamzat Chimaev. That was my favorite fight of the year. But then I started looking back, I'm like, oh yeah, that one. And oh yeah, that one. And Deiveson Figueiredo, Brandon Moreno III. We forgot, kind of forget about that because that was in January, but that was an incredible fight. And of course, Jiří Procházka and Glover Teixeira is right there. The David Onama, Nate Landwehr fight was ridiculous. I loved the Cyril Gane and Tai Tuivasa. That one just going back and forth, kind of wild craziness. Of course, Charles Oliveira, Justin Gaethje was wild, even though it lasted less than a round, but it was an incredible fight for as long as it did last. But for me, it comes down to Gilbert Burns and Khamzat Chimaev, just because that was such an incredible war for three rounds. Those guys took, I mean, that's one of those fights, kind of like Robbie Lawler and Carlos Condit, where it's over and you're like, they both lost a piece of their soul in that fight. Like, they just took something out of each other that they'll never get back. And, you know, that was one of those fights, like, my biggest regret of that fight is it wasn't five rounds. You know, if it was five rounds, I don't know if either guy would have survived. We might have seen a finish, but I think, you know, five rounds of that would have been insane. So, to me, that's number one. Again, I don't have a problem whatsoever with Jiří Procházka and Glover Teixeira being the other one. It's a title fight, obviously a little higher stakes. But I just think about, you know, Khamzat Chimaev, the hype. He was a massive favorite against a legit top three welterweight. Like, people were just looking past Gilbert Burns like he was some bum. And then Gilbert Burns goes in there and was basically a minute away from beating Khamzat. I mean, you talk about that third round, it was so close. And it was just a couple of exchanges difference between Gilbert Burns winning and losing. And then going out there and doing what he did to Khamzat Chimaev, who we just saw what he did to, you know, Kevin Holland, what he's done to everybody else but Gilbert Burns. It's just, it was, that fight was so ridiculous, and that's the one I've rewatched the most this year, so that's why I put it at the top of the list.
Yeah, I don't have any issue with that. AK, what you got?
I picked chaos. I had to go with chaos. I love that Procházka Teixeira fight. I mean, that is just the best, dumbest MMA championship fight I've seen in so long. Fundamentally, maybe not, you know, maybe both men have fought better fights. All right, let's be honest. Was this either guy's best fight? I don't know. I don't know. We've both seen them have better finishes. We've both seen them in more technical, you know, well constructed, well executed battles. Man, you want to talk about guys just reaching down deep and just fighting on instinct, man. Just like throwing stuff out there again, making moves and maneuvers they maybe they shouldn't have done. But what a roller coaster! I just cannot remember the last 5-round fight where I was so up and down. And I like both guys, so like I was certainly rooting for Teixeira. I'd been saying Teixeira was going to submit Prochazka for months, you know, since before the matchup was even made. And there was times where it looked like it was going to happen, and I thought it was going to be a genius, and then Prochazka would just either somehow the position would change. And then Prochazka ended up submitting him, which was complete pandemonium, just bizarre. And I don't know if either man will ever be the same. So that's for me is my number one choice. Shamaya Burns, number two. And then sneaking in there, I loved the Figueiredo-Moreno trilogy bout. It happened at the beginning of the year. So I do feel like a lot of people are maybe going to forget it when year end comes around. That fight is kind of the opposite of Prochazka Teixeira. Just technical and athletic and tactical brilliance. Just both the two best flyweights in the world at their best. Again, this is why we want to see it a fourth time. I could watch these guys fight 10 times. They are the two best. There's a lot of great flyweights out there. And of course, other guys should get their shot. But if you want to run this back once a year, I would have no problem with it. I want Moreno and Figueiredo to fight forever. It is their matchup. They're just so much fun, so perfectly matched in there. So that was my third, and actually very close second. I actually almost like that more than Chimaev Burns. And a big honorable mention to Chris Barnett and Jake Collier, UFC 279. What a dumb fight. You know, when you talk about dumb fights, that was just, I don't know. I still don't know what the hell happened there, but I just know that it was a great time.
Yeah, I add Nate Landwehr, David Onama to that list as well. That fight was absolutely ridiculous. I don't even know what I watched that card at UFC San Diego, but that was incredible. So, Damien, let me ask you this. It's going to be very hard to top those two fights. And if we're going to try to predict the future here, there's one that definitely sticks out. When Michael Chandler shows up at Madison Square Garden in a UFC octagon, it's usually in something that could produce some sort of chaos. We saw it last year against Justin Gaethje. And then anytime Michael Chandler fights in the UFC, some sort of chaos can happen. So I feel like that's the front runner in a lot of people's eyes, that if any fight on the calendar that's booked right now can get up to any of those spots, it's that one. But is there anything else in the books right now that you're like, ooh, this one, if it goes the way I think it will, might actually have a chance to get up there with Burns Chimaev and Teixeira Prochazka?
Let me throw out one other contender that I think could kind of sneak under the radar. Listen, I actually think Oliveira Makhachev is going to be really interesting. I think that could be a really, really interesting fight, the way that Oliveira approaches his fights. And I know that Makhachev is not known for being in really exciting fights, but I think that's a really interesting one. But the one I'm going to throw out as a caveat, Beneil Dariush against Matush Gamrot. We just saw what Gamrot did in that crazy fight with Arman Tsarukyan, and that was an incredible fight, an incredible display of real mixed martial arts. Beneil Dariush doesn't get nearly the respect he deserves for the run he's on and the exciting fights he's put on during that run, the knockouts, the crazy finishes, the dominance he had over Tony Ferguson. You know, he's kind of fallen out of the wayside because he's been injured and fell out of the Makhachev fight, and he's been gone for basically a year now. But I think that Dariush-Gamrot fight is going to open a lot of eyes for the winner of that fight. You know, I think that's going to be a really crazy one. Gamrot's an incredible wrestler, a grinder, really exciting guy. You know, Beneil Dariush has huge knockout power, world-class jiu-jitsu. I think that's one that could kind of slip under the radar and steal a few eyes away from some of these other fights potentially. And again, obviously, you know, Poirier-Chandler is pretty much guaranteed fireworks until one of those guys falls over. But yeah, I think Gamrot Dariush is one that's kind of slipping under the radar.
AK, what do you think? Is there anything out there that you think could be a contender here?
I mean, while we're on 280, like I think 280 just looks absolutely beautiful. Please, MMA gods, keep this card as it is. It's fantastic. Because I think Jan versus O'Malley could actually be really good. I'm not sure what people are expecting there, if they're expecting Jan to run through O'Malley, or if you're an O'Malley fan, like maybe he wins by like a surprising knockout. But I actually think they'll bring the best out of each other. I think we will get a good, if not five rounds, I think it'll go past three, and then maybe some, you know, maybe classic Jan, he'll pull away in the fourth or something, or O'Malley again. O'Malley surprises us and knocks him out. But I think they'll bring out the best in each other. I think it'll be a good tactical battle with some nice, wild, fun moments. So that I have my eye on. And I'm glad you mentioned, I'm glad that Makhachev and Oliveira was mentioned, because yeah, I don't know if it'll be this like barn burner, but it's so intriguing on paper. And also, I should have mentioned this earlier, I think, because I was kind of, you know, I'd stuck with the Jessica Andrade for submission of the year. I'm telling you, when Oliveira submits Makhachev, that will be
wow. The new submission of the year.
That will be the new submission.
I love it. I love it. That's why you were on the show, AK, to just produce hot takes. Jed can't be here. He's retired now. So you're bringing out the hot take guns. And I appreciate that very much. Let's go to the rookie of the year category, because I think this is kind of interesting. So I don't know if we're going to have internal discussion about this. I know there was talks about maybe changing this to breakthrough fighter of the year, but we introduced the rookie of the year award. I don't know if last year was the first year that we did it. I think it might have been. And Casey O'Neill won that. And basically the way that we defined it was they had to debut in a major promotion that year from the regional scene or not from another major promotion. So a guy coming from Bellator to the UFC or vice versa doesn't really count. So to me, Damon, I'll start with you here. There's a clear front runner, but maybe not the way, you know, you want to define this award. So who do you have leading the way right now for this rookie of the year category?
I feel like the answer that everyone is going to most commonly give, and you're probably right, is Gelton Almeida. I mean, that guy is a monster, and what he's done in a couple of fights in the UFC, he's looked incredible. He's got another one coming up, and I think he's going to, you know, that could pretty much cement him as the guy. So that's probably the right answer. Gelton Almeida is off the charts, and I think he's a contender right now. Like, he's a legit contender in his division after a couple fights in the UFC. But I'm going to go in another direction just to give another option, because I do think Gelton Almeida is probably the answer. But I'm actually going to go for Jack Della Maddalena, coming out two fights this year, two knockouts this year, two vicious knockouts this year, coming off the Contender Series out of Australia. I've followed his career for a while now, and I really like this kid, and I think he's in a tougher division in terms of overall talent at welterweight. Now, you can argue he hasn't fought better talent yet, and that's true because, again, he's not got to those top 15 guys yet. But he kind of reminds me a couple years ago when Jeff Neal came in and just started rocking people and just kind of surprising people with how good he was. I think Jack Della Maddalena has that kind of talent, and he is in a better division. Listen, I know Gelton Almeida is light heavyweight and heavyweight. They're not nearly as deep as welterweight. Welterweight to me is, you know, right there with bantamweight, and lightweight is the, you know, deepest and toughest division in the sport. So I'm going with Jack. It's probably not the right answer. I think Gelton Almeida is probably the right answer. And when it's all said and done, that's probably the guy who'll even get my vote, because he's incredible and he's a contender and he's a legit threat to become a champion one day. But I just want to throw out a caveat. I want to throw a little wrinkle in the plan here and say Jack Della Maddalena will get my vote right now just based on his two performances. They've both been incredible, incredible knockouts. And again, I think it's just in a better division overall. But again, Almeida is probably the guy, but Jack Della is my guy.
I have a 1B and a caveat as well. But before we get that, AK, who do you have right now? Is it Almeida? Is it Della Maddalena? Or are we thinking somewhere?
Oh, well, we had different. I think we had very different perspectives on what was the note. Like, for me, the no doubt, when we were talking about this a little bit before the show, and I thought everyone was going to say this same thing. This kind of shows how, like, our interpretation of rookie / breakthrough / what have you, we're not on the same page. We've never been on the same page. We don't know. So, I mean, I thought the obvious choice was Bo Nickel. I don't know if we're not counting it because he's on a Contender Series. Technically, he hasn't, you know, debuted with the UFC, but like, it just seemed like he seems like such an easy choice. He's also a true rookie. I mean, if we want to go, he made his professional debut this year. He fought a couple of times amateur last year, super dominant. But he's gone from, again, obviously being a very famous collegiate wrestler to now being one of the most talked about names in all of MMA. People can say, like, oh, you know, whatever, we've given him a lot of a pub, but that's because people are interested. The guy talks, the guy performs. Again, like we said, the guy has an existing fan base from his extraordinary amateur wrestling career. He really looks like he's going to fight for a title within the first, like, year of his career, which sounds completely insane. I just say 18 months, going back to his pro debut. When the first 18 months, he somehow, it feels like he's going to end up in a title fight. And And when it happens, I don't know if any of us are going to be that surprised. So yeah, just based on his sheer dominance, how much we're talking about him. Yes, technically he has not made his debut, but I think he'll be an even stronger candidate by the end of the year when he fights at UFC 282. And apologies to Jamie Pickett. Probably runs to Jamie Pickett in a round as he did has all his other opponents. So yeah, it's gonna be Bo Nickel for me.
It's Jailton Almeida for me right now. He's got another fight coming up in 16 days against Shamil Abdurakhimov. He's in the lead right now, but inching close behind him is a man who's also fighting on that card. His name is Muhammad Mahaev. That dude is just a monster. I think everyone knows how highly I regard him. I've come out publicly and said I believe he's not only going to be the flyweight champion, but if he keeps on going and keeps on fighting, he will win two titles in two different divisions. I think he's looked impressive. The finish against Cody Durden was ridiculous. The second fight, a lot of people weren't thrilled about, but I think that was even scarier than the first one because he just wrestled and wrestled and wrestled. He had about 879 takedowns. It's going to be so hard to beat this guy. So he's in the mix. Della Maddalena is in the mix. It's hard to leave Joe Pyfer out of this conversation because he is getting pushed real hard. They basically built the whole contender series season early on behind him, and then they gave him a favorable matchup. But Bo Nickel is the interesting point here, Damon. I want to get your thought on this because, like AK said, nobody has made more of an impact in this type of category than he has, but by definition, he hasn't had an official UFC fight yet. May have been under contract, but DWCS is its own thing. It's not UFC. Now, he will fight December 10th against Jamie Pickett. If he does what many believe he will do December 10th, does he win this award?
I mean, I think it's hard to argue against that. Let me say Bo Nickel, in my opinion, is the best prospect coming out of wrestling, coming into MMA we've seen, in my opinion, since Daniel Cormier did all those years ago. I think, you know, I'm the wrestling guy. I follow Bo Nickel at Penn State. He's a monster. He was a constant pain in the side of my Ohio State Buckeyes. Miles Martin was the one guy who beat him early on, but then he beat Miles Martin many times after that. Bo Nickel, listen, and here's why. I totally agree with what AK's saying. Here's my complaint and my problem. It's not the pick. It's this. He should have already made his UFC freaking debut. He should not have had that second contender series fight. That was a bunch of junk. They had to do the second contender series fight to prove himself. Come on now. That was ridiculous. You're telling me he couldn't have come in and done that against a UFC fighter and had a bigger impact and now going into a second fight in December in the UFC and that it is a clear-cut answer for Bo Nickel? It's ridiculous. He should not have fought that second contender series fight. It was a joke. That was an utter, utter joke to make him do that. You knew you were going to sign him. You knew he was going to come in and do what he did. To make him go through that instead of putting him in the UFC right away was ridiculous. So, yeah, Bo Nickel's probably the right answer in terms of talent, in terms of prospect, because I think that guy's going to be a champion sooner rather than later, 100%. Without a doubt, I believe that. My biggest issue is, like I said, he didn't actually have the UFC fight yet. So, yeah, that's the problem. And also, I do want to say, I didn't forget about Muhammad Mukhaev. I think Mukhaev is an incredible prospect. And I think he's also got to be in that running if he gets his win over Malcolm Gordon, which is a tough fight. I think he wins that fight, but it's a tough fight. Malcolm Gordon's no joke. So Mukhaev's got to be in that conversation as well. But yeah, Bo Nickel should be looking at 2-0 in the UFC by the end of the year, not 1-0.
Yeah, he's gonna be the name. Like, if anyone's going to upend any of those other guys in our voting, it's going to be Bo. If he beats Jamie Pickett, and a lot of people feel like he is going to do just that. Just to add a little bit of spice to this, add a female into the conversation. If Yasmin Yuragi beats Estella Nunes December 3rd, she might be like the number five. She might end up with a couple of votes.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out.
Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries.
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on. And there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It's always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back. If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, everything okay in there? Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog.
And that leads us to the female fighter of the year. And this one is really interesting because Valentina Shevchenko had a title defense. She won a very close decision, a decision a lot of people thought she lost. Amanda Nunes had one title defense against Julieta Pena. She looked great doing it. And neither will fight again in 2022, it appears. And who knows? There could be someone that comes through later in the year. I don't know, but we have Liz Carmouche. She's the Bellator flyweight champion. She beat Juliana Velasquez. They'll run it back in December. I believe that's when that one's happening. But that was kind of contentious because of the stoppage. But AK, I'm going to start with you, and I'm going to start with this question. And this person I'm bringing up has a fight coming up in November. But is Molly McCann the female fighter of the year right now? Two wins, two finishes. She's got a nominee for KO of the year. And I mean, just look at the women's divisions right now in the UFC and Bellator. Is she actually leading the pack right now?
She would, if she beats Erin Blanchfield, she might be my pick. Might be. But even then, I might not go from my initial choice here, who I think is the fighter of the year through this recording and the first three fights that she's had. I think people got to show some love to, and this is the answer I'd be giving if I were going for brownie points, if this were a competitive BTL, and trying to go for brownie points from our producer, Casey. Saika Izawa. Yeah, Saika Izawa, I think, has to be considered. There we go. Thank you. I was giving him time to cue it up. She beat Ayaka Hamasaki last year, who was considered by my team, you know, the Adam Waite GOAT or one of the greatest Adam Waites of all time. And then they did an immediate rematch. She won again earlier this year, unanimous decision, and just has kind of dominated her past two opponents. She's only 24 years old. She's undefeated 8-0. She is in our pound for pound rankings. Unfortunately, you know, I'm sure everyone's like, oh, I want to see her come over to the UFC or I want to see her come over to Bellator. It's like those promotions don't have Adam Waite divisions. So I would just say, hey, check out these Ryzen fights because she's doing some real damage over there. So, you know, is the competition, aside from Ayaka Hamasaki, like has the, you know, her recent competition been as good as she could be facing relative to, you know, strawweights or flyweights in North America? I don't know. I can't say that fairly, but I will say she's been super impressive. Again, just 24 years old, extremely dominant. And in a year where I feel like it's lacking a clear cut, a dominant women's fighter, like we said, Amanda Nunes, great performance against Pena, but just the one fight. Shevchenko, very tough win over Tyler Santos. I don't know why that rematch hasn't been booked yet. I'm just going with results. And Izawa 3-0. Probably, I imagine they might book her again for the year end card. She could go 4-0 in 2022. And then even if Molly McCann does beat Erin Blanchfield, it might still be Izawa in the end. But but the Molly McCann question is really valid and was the first name that popped in my head before I did some more, you know, did some more digging.
Damon, where are you at with this one?
All right. First off, I want to know, did you guys pass out the drugs before the show and you didn't tell me and didn't join? Because you guys are on something with the Molly McCann pick. Her opponents she beat this year have a combined UFC record of 4-6. Okay, let's slow down on Molly McCann's quality opponent here when you talk about two spinning. But she beat Hannah Goldie, who's 1-3 in the UFC, and I like the one fight I'm still shocked she won. Okay, 4-6 record. So let's slow down on the Molly McCann. The level of competition matters when you talk about knockouts. Both spectacular 4-6 opponents. Okay, let's slow down there. Listen, it's not an easy answer because the champions have not been as active. Amanda Nunes has one fight. Valentina Shevchenko has one fight. For me right now, it's Amanda Nunes because of the way she came back and beat Juliana Pena from pillar to post in that fight. I mean, it was a lopsided fight. Basically should have been a finish. Juliana Pena was just so tough. She stuck around for all five rounds. But for Amanda Nunes to lose the way she did the first time and then come back and just wreck Juliana Pena for 5 rounds to reclaim her title. That to me puts her at number one. I'm not super confident in that pick only because, again, it's only one fight. I think, you know, Kayla Harrison has an argument. I know you say level of competition, but if she goes out and beats Larissa Pacheco's look like a killer this year, you could put her in that conversation a little bit. But I think the one fighter that I know a lot of people are going to completely disagree with me on this, and I know I'm going to get hate for this one. If Carla Sparza goes out and beats Zhang Wei Li in November, I think she's the fighter in Women's Fight of the Year, because I don't care how ugly the fight was with Rose Namajunas. The fact that she got the title back like 7 years later and actually went out there and became a champion again, which is so rare for a fighter to go that long and then come back and become a champion. And then she's going to go into the fight against Zhang Weili as a massive underdog. No one is picking Carla Esparza to win that fight. If she can go out there and beat Zhang Weili, I think Carla Esparza is going to be my pick for the top fighter. Now, will she beat Zhang Weili? That's a whole other question. But if she does, I think Carla Esparza is the answer.
Interesting choice. That's not a bad one. Molly is in the mix right now. I don't care who she fought, just the way she's went out there and did her job. And she's gotten over probably more than any other women's fighter on the roster right now, for being honest. But I don't think she's going to win this. Even if she beats Erin Blanchfield, I don't think it's going to happen, because damn it, I think you're right. I think whoever wins that fight probably is the front runner. Even if Zhang Wei Li wins the title, I think she's probably the front runner to be the fighter of the year, because she knocked out and retired Joanna Jędrzejczyk and then wins the title in the same year. I think that puts her in a really good spot. I know this name might not be the most popular when it comes to this, but I think Caitlin Chookagian is currently in the conversation right now with 2 wins. If she beats Manon Fiorro at UFC 280, she's had a pretty decent strength of schedule. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting right now because we have to wait for some of these fights to happen. But I feel like Zhang Wei Li has the best chance to win this award at the moment. AK, what do you think? What's your future projections telling you?
First off, I do want to shout out Jillian DeCourcy, who's had a nice little not the women's fighter of the year, but a nice little tidy 2022. Comes back to Invicta. She's kind of a homegrown Invicta product, has fought for Invicta and Cage Fury, and so came back to Invicta this year a little bit of after some time off. First round finish, Lindsay Van Zandt. First round finish of Jessica Del Boni, who's a really good fighter. And she's Invicta atomweight champ. So nice little story there. So good for her. I will say I agree with the Chookagian thing. I mean, I know people, it sounds shocking if she beats Manon Fiorro that she would be the fighter of the year, women's fighter of the year, but she's been really successful this year, as she always is every year outside of, you know, winning sort of the big ones. And then I'll just honorable mention as well for Emily Ducote. Emily Ducote, if she beats Angela Hill, that's pretty big. I think Ducote, I don't know if she's in our rankings or is a Favre, if she's received votes, but that'll be 3-0. Beats Jessica Penne, another veteran. Again, she defended her Invicta strawweight title earlier this year before making the jump to the UFC. And then obviously getting any kind of win over Angela Hill would be huge. So don't sleep on that. We'll see. I find it hard for anyone to get a convincing win over Angela Hill. So if she did pull that off, then that's a huge feather in her cap. But she's in the running. So yeah, definitely Emily Ducote.
She's number 14 in our rankings right now. Angela Hill, right, number 13. Yeah. The stakes could not be higher.
The 13th is 115.
Also, I think Erin Blanchfield is going to end the Molly McCann conversation in November. No offense to Molly McCann. I think Erin Blanchfield is a huge step up in competition, in my opinion.
And I think Molly McCann is a huge step up in competition for Erin Blanchfield.
I mean, you're not wrong, but Hannah Goldie to Erin Blanchfield, that seems like a pretty big jump to me. So,
listen, I'm way on the Erin Blanchfield hype train, but I just keep telling people she's super young, and I don't know. I agree. I think she's a future champion someday, but like, I'm always, you know, kind of tentative with predicting huge things for these prospects, unless your name is Bo Nickel. But yeah, she's super young and I just need to see a little more, but yeah, I mean, she's great. I let me put it this way. Neither outcome would surprise me. I would tell people if Molly McCann beat her, I wouldn't be super surprised. And of course, if Blanchfield wins, I definitely would not be surprised.
So that's going to be fun for the last couple of months of the year. Much like the male fighter of the year category, because a lot can happen between now and the end of the year. But Damon, it's pretty clear, at least to me, and maybe I'm wrong about this, Alexander Volkanovski is the front runner right now, is he not?
He actually is my number two.
Really?
He is my number two. Listen, my immediate pick was Alexander Volkanovski. You go out there and decimate the Korean Zombie, and then you beat Max Holloway the way he did. That was unbelievable. That was one of the most unbelievable performances I've ever witnessed. To beat Max Holloway the way he did was unbelievable. But I wasn't shocked that he won. I was shocked at how he won, but I wasn't shocked that he won. Alexander Volkanovski has been one of the best guys in the world. Leon Edwards knocking out Kamaru Usman after he was down 3-1, looked like he was on his way to a decision loss and probably the only title shot he would have his entire career, to then rocket that head kick up and knock out the number one pound-for-pound fighter in the world. In my opinion, again, Volkanovski was number one in our rankings. My opinion, Usman was still number one. To go out there and do that the way he did, and I know it's one fight. It's not, you know, multiple fights in a year. But we have a lot of one fights this year. We have a lot of champions who only fought one time this year, you know, so it's a little harder. Kind of like the women's division with, you know, Amanda Nunes and Shevchenko and things like that. Leon Edwards going out and doing what he did in a fight that no one was picking him to win. Come on, let's be honest. No one was picking him to win. Everyone was looking at Usman and Chimaev. Everyone was looking at Usman and Chimaev. It was going to be the big fight in 2023. That was the fight we were going to get. For Leon Edwards to go out there and shock the world and knock out Kamaru Usman in that fifth round so definitively, and again, I think that would have been it. If he didn't win that fight, I don't think he'd ever get another title shot again. I really don't. I really don't think he'd ever get back there again because there wasn't a lot of people banging the drum for him to get that title shot. For him to go out and do what he did to the number one pound-for-pound fighter in the world, knock him out, the first guy to ever do that to Kamaru Usman, it's Leon Edwards. I put him number one. I think he's my choice for fighter of the year. Listen, Volkanovski's incredible. You're never going to find a guy who's going to I'm going to disagree with putting Volkanovski number one, the two fights he had this year. But again, neither fight surprised me. I thought he was a... I thought what he did to Korean Zombie was exactly what I expected him to do to Korean Zombie. I didn't expect him to walk through Max Holloway in the rematch or in the trilogy, but I wasn't shocked he won. I was shocked Leon Edwards did what he did to Kamaru Usman.
AK, where are you at on this? Because to me, anybody who jumps Kamaru Usman in the number one pound-for-pound conversation, even before Usman lost to Leon Edwards, to me, just the two performances, and I'm not taking... Leon's going to be on my top five list. There's no doubt about it. But to me, it's got to be Volkanovski. He just... He had two perfect games this year. He beat the hell out of Korean Zombie. And it was like... It was like torturous to watch. I was just waiting for this fight to end. I felt bad for the Korean Zombie. And then he puts on a legit masterclass against Max Holloway, a guy a lot of people thought was going to win that fight when I was in Vegas. It was crazy. So is it Volk right now? Obviously Leon, I ain't going to argue with you if you pick him because of the win and the stature of it. But right now, year of our Lord 2022, October 6th, who is number one for you?
It's Volk. He climbed to the top of the MMA fighting pound for pound rankings, the most illustrious list that a fighter can top. So that's huge. And I don't think it can be understated or overstated. I don't think it can be overstated how important it was for him to beat Max Holloway again and to do it the way he did. Because I don't know if we're already starting to revise the history. But like for the last 2 years since that second fight, a very close competitive fight, he is still somehow, even as he defended the title against Ortega in another classic, somehow Volkanovski had still been under the shadow of Holloway. And it was so unfair. I thought it was so – people were saying the first fight was close, which it wasn't. I mean, it was uneventful, but it was – first fight, people, anyone go back and watch it, a clear win for Volkanovski. Not like he like dominated and like beat the crap out of Max, but if you're going by how fights are scored, I mean, I don't see how you could score the fight for Holloway. So people just kind of forget that fight. And because the second fight was so close, there's a lot of people going like, oh, both fights were close. No, the second fight was super close. I still scored that one for Volkanovski. So in my mind, as much as I was like open to seeing them fight a third time, I'm glad it took as long as it did. I'm glad it took 2 years. The only downside to that was everyone who was still on the Max train was not going to be satisfied until they saw that third fight, no matter what happened. Because for me, again, I already thought Volkanovski was clearly the better featherweight. The win over Ortega only like reinforced that. So, and if you're Volkanovski, I'm sure in your mind, you know, there was no doubts, but now there's no doubts in anyone's mind. So it was a big, big, big statement win. It wasn't just, oh, going up 3-0 against the same guy. It was like, this was the one that really mattered to people. That shouldn't have been the case, but that is how it was. Again, people If anyone thinks I'm crazy, again, just go back and read and watch some of our people on the MMA fighting staff who are still, you know, pushing that Holloway train and saying that Holloway's, you know, is going to beat Volkanovski, or that Holloway was still the number one. They still think he was number one after their second fight. This was a real thing. So because he's number one pound for pound for us now, because he closed the door on the Max Holloway fight, because he is on his way, and I can say this because Jed's not here, he is on his way to becoming, with many more title defenses, the consensus number one featherweight of all time. I think he's got to be the male fighter of 2022.
So no matter if you have Volkanovski in that spot, if you have Leon Edwards in that spot, we still have a lot of ways to go here. There's a lot of big fights, and I'll start with you, Damon, because Leon's not fighting the rest of the year. Volkanovski's probably not fighting the rest of the year unless something absolutely insane happens. Maybe he does, but not looking likely. We have Aljo fighting TJ Dillashaw at UFC 280. If he wins, that's two successful title defenses for him. We have Oliveira versus Makhachev. Both will have two wins. And I actually think there's one other fight that actually could decide this altogether. So how do you think this all ends up? What's the biggest fights in play for you right now in order to determine who can and will win this award?
I think Aljamain Sterling deserves more credit than he's getting. If he goes out and beats TJ Dillashaw, that's such a huge win after he beat Peter Yan and kind of vanquished those demons from the first fight. So I think he deserves a lot of credit. And I'm actually picking him to beat TJ Dillashaw, so I think he'll be in that conversation. Charles Oliveira, once again, in that conversation, beating Justin Gaethje. If he goes out and beats Islam Makhachev, huge win. Although, as much as I like Makhachev, and I think Makhachev's a monster, and I wouldn't be shocked if he wins that fight, Makhachev still hasn't put together the resume to really, you know, truly deserve the ranking necessarily he's getting right now. He hasn't had those big marquee wins yet, but still a very quality win. But I think the answer is Alex Pereira. If he goes out and beats Israel Adesanya in like his fourth UFC fight, and that's after knocking out Sean Strickland in like, you know, a minute and a half or whatever it was, I think that's the guy. Alex, you know, is a kickboxer who has six mixed martial arts fights, seven, whatever it is, very low number. If he can go out and beat Israel Adesanya, now we all know that's a favorable matchup. It's not him going out there and fighting a Bo Nickel wrestler, let's say, or even a Hamzat Chimaev wrestler. Okay, sure. But if he can go out there and beat Israel and beat him emphatically like he did in their rematch in kickboxing, knock him out, beat him like that, I think Alex Pereira is probably the answer. I mean, I think that is 100% the guy. And listen, I love Aljamain. I think he deserves to be in that conversation, especially if he beats TJ Dillashaw. But if Alex goes out there and beats Adesanya, that's two big wins. That's a knockout over Strickland. That's a win over Adesanya. And listen, Adesanya, say what you will about him, he's on one of the best winning streaks in terms of title defenses, in terms of champions in the UFC. I think that's the guy. I think he's the guy who could kind of upset the apple cart with a win in November.
Yeah, and to me, I think that fight could actually decide this award altogether. What do you think, AK? I mean, I think if Pereira wins, it's pretty much a lock for him. But if Izzy wins, that's three title defenses for him. And I know the Vegas faithful were not pleased with his performance against Jared Cannonier, but he beat Robert Whittaker. And after watching what Robert Whittaker did to Marvin Vettori, that win aged beautifully, did it not? I feel like this fight could decide this award.
That was my sort of looking ahead, who could steal this. I think no matter what happens in some of the other fights, even if, and I'm a huge Charles Oliveira guy, even when Charles Oliveira submits Makhachev, I still think Pereira fighting his way back to a third Izzy fight in MMA and winning the title would be so amazing. I don't know if I feel strongly the other way, that like if Adesanya wins, that then, you know, he should get the spot. I think it would matter how he did it. Certainly a highlight reel knockout would go a long way towards, you know, washing out the bitter taste of some of his previous title defenses, which again, I think were fine. But from an entertainment standpoint, yes, your average viewer was not thrilled. So it's hard to call someone the fighter of the year, even if he wins, like in a year where he's taken so much like lambasting from the public, deserved or not. So that would be a weird title to give him. So if Izzy kind of pulls off another methodical win, I probably would still lean towards Volkanovski. I just think that the win over Zombie, so dominant. The second win over, the third win over Max Holloway, again dominant in a different way. So I don't mind it. I don't mind a case for Izzy. I can see a lot of people saying it goes three title defenses against top competition, Robert Whittaker, an old kickboxing rival, and also Jared Kennedy are thrown in there, even though people aren't really talking about that one for good reasons. But for me, it is a two-fighter race right now. It's Volkanovski leading the way. And if Alex Pereira can beat Israel Adesanya again, boy, he'd be a fun pick for Fighter of the Year, wouldn't he?
Damon mentioned a name, so I have to go back to this one. We're going to play a little hypothetical game, and I'll start with you, Damon. Let's just say, because this has been such a crazy year, let's just say that this individual gets back into the octagon at some point, whether it be at welterweight or at middleweight. Let's just say the UFC finds a way to book Khamzat Chimaev versus Colby Covington. And what if Khamzat Chimaev goes out there and does to Colby Covington what he did to Kevin Holland? Is Khamzat Chimaev in this conversation, Damon? I don't think he's in there now, but does the weight miss take him out of the running altogether if he gets a third win this year, or is he in the mix?
No, I think the weight miss and the level of competition in that fight do. I like Kevin Holland very much. Kevin Holland was training to fight Daniel Rodriguez, a boxer. He hadn't trained wrestling a day in his camp, I'm sure. And listen, it's a good win, but you got it because you screwed up being in the main event. You missed weight by 7.5 pounds. The Gilbert Burns fight, incredibly impressive. And if he can go out and beat, if he goes out and beats Colby Covington, which, by the way, I don't think that's a sure thing. Colby Covington, listen, I'm not a fan of the dude, in terms of what he says, but you can't doubt that he's a really, really good fighter. I don't think that Khamzat Chimaev just washes Colby Covington. If he wins, if he gets Colby Covington and wins, great. It's a big win, and he definitely deserves a lot of credit, especially for beating him and Gilbert Burns in the same year. But I don't even really, in a weird way, I don't discount the Kevin Holland fight, but I don't really put it that high on my mark as far as what it does for him, because he got it because he screwed up making weight for a main event, and he got a guy who hadn't trained a single day in his entire training camp for a guy like Khamzat Chimaev. Nate Diaz said after his win over Tony Ferguson, all I did was train grappling. I did nothing but train grappling for this guy. Kevin Holland didn't do any of that. So yeah, it's a win, but I mean, come on, is it really that impressive that he missed weight that badly? I can't do it. I think that hurts him more than it helps him in a weird way. Like, beating Kevin Holland doesn't help Khamzat Chimaev's case, at my point. If he had just beat Gilbert Burns, and then if he came back and beat Colby Covington, I'd probably be more likely to say maybe he is Fighter of the Year. But you just beat those, two guys, then you throw in the weight miss, the Kevin Holland fight, it doesn't really do much for me.
Yeah, optics is such a big part of this award. Like, can you be the Fighter of the Year in a year where what people talked about most was you missing weight by 7.5 pounds and and putting an entire pay-per-view card in jeopardy? Like, can you be the Fighter of the Year then? Can you be the Fighter of the Year if, again, with Adesanya, where, like, yes, you were winning, but what people most talked about was, wow, I don't want to watch this guy's main events anymore. Like, can you be the Fighter of the Year in that year? Charles Oliveira, can you be the Fighter of the Year in a year where you lost the title on the scale? I don't know. So, when there's this many good fighters, you're kind of like nitpicking. So those are obviously the little nits that I'm throwing out there. That's why I think Alex Pereira has like the clearest path, barring something weird happening before the fight or in the fight with Izzy. And same with Volkanovski, it's like, mostly free of controversy. We're just talking about how great his performances were, nothing else, no other weirdness. So that's why it's him and Poatan. But Adesanya and Charles Oliveira and Chimaev, great fighters. Again, Chimaev maybe fights again before the end of the year, could cement that. But because of the sort of these other things that are part of their story that we cannot separate from their 2022 campaigns, they're just a notch below, I think, Volk and Pereira, if Pereira beats Adesanya.
Well, we will see what happens. I think we've done a good job sort of laying the land for these awards, and I think we're setting ourselves up for a fun couple of months to wrap up the year. Of course, no UFC, no big time MMA this weekend, but we're off and running next weekend. Decent card next weekend, and then it's on to UFC 280, and that card is just ridiculous. And then Cater versus Allen, Evloya versus Mitchell, and then on to UFC 281, and on we go. And I have a feeling that we could be having a whole new discussion come December when we do the actual award show when this is all said and done. So, AK, any final thoughts, any final words, anything you missed? The floor is yours.
I feel like we covered everything. There's always the thought that we missed something. I've been watching the brilliant YouTube comments closely, of course, and I think we covered all the bases. Of course, guys, if there's any weird sort of moment or a huge moment that we somehow didn't discuss, you know, throw it in there. Throw it in the comments when this goes up on MMAfighting.com. But what a great year I think it has been action-wise. Again, we've had a lot of storylines and things that we haven't really wanted to discuss. You mentioned, like, we don't want to talk about Mark Zuckerberg anymore, blah, 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 and who knows what other kookiness we've had to deal with. But the in-cage action has consistently delivered. There's been great upsets, new champions, people who are already champions taking it to another level. So it's been a lot of fun so far this year, and I do like that. We still have some fun to come. I mean, Uriah Hall's boxing. What's going on? Combat sports is wild, man. Combat sports is wild. So I'm looking forward to the next 3 months.
Party. Damon, any final thoughts?
Fighter of the year, let's not forget Anderson Silva. If he goes out and beats Jake Paul, and I'm kind of joking, but not really. The other one I want to throw out, also another fight of the year candidate, I want to throw out Yuri Prochazka. If he actually comes back and beats Glover again in December, that's another one I want to mention. But I want to throw this out there because I didn't pick him for rookie of the year. And I kind of feel bad about that only because, again, the UFC kind of screwed him out of a second UFC fight this year being Bo Nickel. You will not find a bigger Bo Nickel guy than myself because I'm kind of the wrestling dude. Right now, if they put Bo Nickel, something weird happens. Alex Pereira gets injured and they say, you know what, Bo Nickel, you're getting a title shot against Israel Adesanya on November 11th.
Oh,
Bo Nickel beats Israel. Bo Nickel beats Israel Adesanya right now. Right now.
He said it.
Bo Nickel beats Israel Adesanya. I think Chimaev's a tougher fight because Chimaev actually has the wrestling.
Producer did not like that.
Bo Nickel beats Israel Adesanya right now. He out wrestles him. I pick him to beat him.
Another name we and I don't know if he's gonna end up fighting or not this year, but another name that I feel might be a Favre in this situation, because if he gets another fight this year, it's gonna be a big one. I feel like Marlon Vera could get a vote or two, but it just depends on what matchup he might be able to get, because he's had a friggin' great year too. So beating Rob Font decisively.
Cheeto Sanhagen.
Give me that. Give me that sometime before the end of the year. And if Marlon wins, he might get a vote or two as well. So a lot to unpack. We'll see how the rest of the year goes, but we are out of here. Casey, you can hit the music. Back to normal BTL programming next week. Jed's retired, so I don't know what the hell we're going to do. So he's making my job very difficult. But for AK, for Damon Martin, Casey, thank you for your work on the ones and twos. The iconic voice of Esterlin takes you home. We'll see you back here next week on BTL. I am Mike Heck. Good night, everybody.
This is Jed Meshew. I'm a big quitter. I can't handle between the links. AK, happy birthday.
Listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. There's an art to making the complex feel simple. Everything should be in sync so that even the smallest part serves a bigger purpose. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so ambitious companies have the precision, control, and focus they need to perform at their best. Apply in minutes at mercury.com.